him. Now, Ajahn Chah learned from an old layman at Wat Khao Wongkot, Lumpuman had returned to the northeast after 10 years of solitary wandering in the north, and a large group of monks had gathered around him in the Puphan Mountains of Sikonikon. Ajahn Chah's plans for the cold season crystallized. At the end of the retreat, Ajahn Chah, together with three other monks and novices and two laymen, set off on the long walk back to the northeast. They broke the journey at Bangkor and, after a few days' rest, began a 250-kilometer hike northwards. By the 10th day, they had reached the elegant white stupa of That Phanom, an ancient pilgrimage spot on the banks of the Mekong, and paid homage to the Buddha's relics enshrined there. They continued their walk in stages, by now finding forest monasteries along the way in which to spend the night. Even so, it was an arduous trek, and the novice and the layman asked to turn back. The group consisted of just three monks and a layman when they finally arrived at Wat Phu Nong Na Nai, the home of Lumpuman. As they walked into the monastery, Ajahn Chah was immediately struck by its tranquil and secluded atmosphere. The central area in which stood a small meeting hall was immaculately swept, and the few monks they caught sight of were attending to their daily chores silently, with a measured and composed gracefulness. There was something about the monastery that was like no other that he had been in before. The silence was strangely charged and vibrant. Ajahn Chah and his companions were received politely, and after being advised where to put up their mosquito nets, took a welcome bath to wash off the grime of the road. In the evening, the three young monks, their double-layered outer robes folded neatly over their left shoulders, minds fluctuating between keen anticipation and cold fear, made their way to the wooden sala, to pay respects to Lumpuman. Crawling on his knees toward the great master, flanked on both sides by the resident monks, Ajahn Chah approached a slight and aged figure with an indomitable diamond-like presence. It is easy to imagine Lumpuman's bottomless eyes and his deeply penetrating gaze boring into Ajahn Chah as he bowed three times and sat down at a suitable distance. Most of the monks were sitting with their eyes closed in meditation. One sat slightly behind Lumpuman, slowly fanning away the evening's mosquitoes. As Ajahn Chah glanced up, he would have noticed how prominently Lumpuman's collarbone jutted through the pale skin above his robe and how his thin mouth, stained red with betel juice, formed such an arresting contrast to the strange luminosity of his presence. As is the time-honored custom among Buddhist monks, Lumpuman first asked the visitors how long they had been in the robes, the monasteries they had practiced in, and the details of their journey. Did they have any doubts about the practice? Ajahn Chah swallowed. Yes, he did. He had been studying Vinaya texts, those are the books of discipline, Vinaya texts with great enthusiasm, but had become discouraged. The discipline seemed too detailed to be practical. It didn't seem possible to keep every single rule. What should one's standard be? Lumpuman advised Ajahn Chah to take the two guardians of the world, Hiri in Pali, which is conscience, and Otapa, intelligent fear of consequences, as his basic principle. In the presence of those two virtues, he said, everything else would follow. He then began to discourse on the threefold training of virtue, meditation, and wisdom. The four roads to success, that's, desire, effort, application of mind, and investigation, and the five spiritual powers, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. Eyes half closed, his voice becoming stronger and faster as he proceeded, as if he was moving into a higher and higher gear. With an absolute authority, he described the way things truly are and the path to liberation. Ajahn Chah and his companions sat completely enwrapped. Ajahn Chah later said that although he had spent an exhausting day on the road, hearing Lumpuman's Dhamma talk made all of his weariness disappear. His mind became peaceful and clear, and he felt as if he was floating in the air above his seat. It was late at night before Lumpuman called the meeting to an end, and Ajahn Chah returned to his mosquito net, aglow. On the second night, Nupuman gave more teachings, and Ajahn Chah felt that he had come to the end of his doubts about the practice that lay ahead. He felt a joy and rapture in the Dhamma that he had never known before. Now what remained was for him to put his knowledge into practice. Indeed, one of the teachings that had inspired him the most on those two evenings was this injunction to make himself a witness to the truth. But the most clarifying explanation, one that gave him the necessary context or basis for practice that he had been hitherto lacking, was of a distinction between the mind itself and transient states of mind which arose and passed away within it. And then Ajahn Chah says himself, Lumpuman said they're merely states. Through not understanding that point, we take them to be real, to be the mind itself. In fact, they're all just transient states. As soon as he said that, things suddenly became clear. Suppose there's happiness present in the mind. It's a different kind of thing. It's on a different level to the mind itself. If you see that then you can stop, you can put things down. When conventional realities are seen for what they are, then it's ultimate truth. Most people lump everything together as the mind itself, but actually there are states of mind together with the knowing of them. If you understand that point, then there's not a lot to do. On the third day, Ajahn Chah paid his respects to Lumpuman and led his small group off into the lonely forest of Phupan once more. He left the monastery behind him, never to return again, but with his heart full of an inspiration that would stay with him for the rest of his life.